Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Robot Souls, Programming in Humanity, by Eve Poole. Narrated by Esther Wayne. Limit of liability / disclaimer of warranty. Reasonable efforts have been made to publish reliable data and information, but the author and publisher cannot assume responsibility for the validity of all materials or the consequences of their use. The authors and publishers have attempted to trace the copyright holders of all material reproduced in this publication, and apologise to copyright holders if permission to publish in this form has not been obtained. If any copyright material has not been acknowledged, please write and let us know, so we may rectify in any future reprint. Preface. Humanity is at a crossroads. We have advanced far enough in our development of artificial intelligence to understand that we are in danger of losing control of it. We have already designed robots that can learn from scratch and be resourceful about finding any data they lack. We have also designed them to reprogram themselves if they decide it would improve their ability to meet their objectives. This means that we are increasingly designing ourselves out of their lives. At the moment, our freedoms are protected by a set of assumptions about the dignity of the human person that are actually rather hard to substantiate. Because we have not often had to define our humanity, we are not precise at doing so. And in a world where the regulation and control of artificial intelligence is of increasing concern, there is an urgent need to be able to be more precise. One cipher that has been used in history to define humanity is to engage the concept of the soul. Today, this is more familiar as the discussion of consciousness. But if consciousness is a prerequisite for human rights, what happens if artificial intelligence becomes conscious? This book reviews progress in artificial intelligence and examines the traditional debate on consciousness and the soul. It examines how we might understand soul as the basis for human design, and discovers in it an array of code that is in danger of being overlooked. In particular, it argues that we have deliberately kept this junk code away from artificial intelligence because we did not appreciate its value. The book concludes that we should instead identify, nurture, and promote this code as the defining feature of our humanity. Furthermore, we should seek to code it into artificial intelligence, not only because of its usefulness in design, but also because it is the right thing for us to do, to behave well towards the creatures we have made. Chapter 1. What is AI? It may be that today's large neural networks are slightly conscious. Ilya Sutskever, Chief Scientist, OpenAI, the 9th of February, 2022. Is AI conscious? In a lab at Columbia University back in 2017, Hod Lipson was working on a robot. It was a simple little thing, just four small mechanical legs, which had been tasked with moving to the other side of the room. It had been programmed using deep learning, which uses artificial neural networks and reinforcement learning so that robots can teach themselves. Lipson wanted to know if these legs could work out how to walk on their own. Lo and behold, after a few days, the robot had taken its first steps and achieved the goal. So Lipson removed one of the legs to see if it could relearn to walk with just three. It worked. Flushed with success, the team got the clever robot ready for a formal demonstration. They started tracking how it was using its neural network to learn and discovered something unexpected. The robot had taught itself how to read their faces. It had realised that observer feedback was relevant data and had decided to harvest it. Indeed, it had repurposed a neuron just for that task. As humans, we can see why this was a smart choice, because we have all stood around cheering on a toddler, and our feedback helps them learn how to walk too. Before this happened, We had thought that robots would not be able to develop what looks a lot like spontaneous self-awareness, or at least not for years to come, until we finally developed artificial general intelligence and a superintelligent brain of such staggering complexity that consciousness would naturally emerge. But Lipson's robot is quite basic. Were we wrong? Yes and no. I think we were wrong to think that this kind of self-awareness is just a property of the living. Logically, it must kick in whenever in its evolution an entity needs it to, in order to promote learning and progress. But self-awareness is still different from consciousness, and consciousness in turn is distinct from soul. And because these distinctions are very important, it is worth exploring how they relate. But first, how far has artificial intelligence, AI, already got in replacing us with robots? Robots. AI and robotics are often interchangeable in the public imagination, because AI is often depicted as embodied in robots or androids. We've been tinkering with robots for centuries. According to Hesiod, even the ancient Greek god Hephaestus created automata, notably a giant bronze man called Talos, who protected the island of Crete by marching around the island 3 times a day, hurling boulders at enemy ships. Clockwork powered a trend for automata in the European courts of the late Renaissance, and the Victorian enthusiasm for mechanical marvels is now forever celebrated in the SF subgenre steampunk. Myths about bringing things to life recur throughout history. Pygmalion statue in Ovid's Metamorphoses, the puppet Pinocchio becoming a real boy thanks to the blue fairy, and even Frankenstein's monster. Gods, fairies, or scientists are usually involved in these animations or resurrections, and they do not always end well. Robotics in general has become a vital part of many manufacturing processes, and we are used to seeing pictures of machines making other machines. We are used to seeing robotics increasingly deployed in surgery. Many of these are sophisticated but essentially mechanical extensions of the physical capacities of the operator, although they are increasingly being programmed to think as well. Many robots are now programmed to work autonomously, and some are also deliberately designed to look humanoid, as well as to use cognitive algorithms. We are increasingly seeing these kinds of robots being used as companions for the elderly in countries like Japan. An uncomfortable milestone was reached in October 2017 when the Saudi Arabian state awarded citizenship to the humanoid social robot Sophia. Inventing AI. How did we get here? Imagine you are tasked with inventing AI. To start with, you need to accomplish 3 foundational intellectual leaps. The first pivotal step is to conceive of thought as a process, and not simply as a spontaneous phenomenon of some mysterious and nebulous kind. We owe this innovation to Thomas Hobbes. In his 1651 Leviathan, he starts his famous work of political economy off with his account of human nature. Based on his view of the body as a machine, he introduces the concept of trains of thought and the idea of rationality as computation. Arguing that our thoughts are just like the reckoning of additions and subtractions, he establishes the vital theoretical foundation for AI that human thought is a process. Next, you need to imagine that the thoughts of every person could be expressed in some kind of universal way in order to surmount the international language barrier. Gottfried Leibniz made this leap for us in identifying the universal language as the language of mathematics. In 1705, inspired by the hexagrams in the Chinese text the I Ching, he invented the binary system as his Characteristica Universalis, which became the source of modern binary code. Now we have 2 of our vital foundations. Thoughts are processes that can be mathematically expressed. Finally, in order for AI to be possible, you need to make the intellectual leap that if numbers are the universal language, then any computational machine that processes numbers can process anything else that can be expressed in numbers. In the 19th century, Ada Lovelace provides this crucial piece of the puzzle. In 1833, her friend Charles Babbage had invented an analytical engine, hailed as the first programmable computer, and Lovelace was charged with translating a description of it from French. Babbage's machine used the kind of punch cards deployed in cloth factories to program jacquard looms, and this made her realise that if programs could be used for both mathematics and weaving, perhaps anything susceptible to being rendered in logic, like music, could also be processed by a machine. Her notes describing the engine were published in Taylor's Scientific Memoirs in 1843, and, as Doran Swade puts it, for the first time expressed the fundamental transition from a machine which is a number cruncher to a machine for manipulating symbols according to rules that is the fundamental transition from calculation to computation. So now, we have thoughts as processes that can be expressed universally as numbers that can be processed by a machine. With these foundation stones in place, the fun can begin. How on earth do we get from jacquard looms and Babbage machines to Deep Blue and AlphaGo? This requires a two-pronged evolution in both the hardware and the software involved. First, in hardware, it requires the transition from the massive mechanical machines that decrypted the Enigma codes to the tiny, ubiquitous smartphone. This move from mechanics to electronics marries a gradual reduction in size with an exponential increase in power. This was pioneered in the 1940s and 1950s through the use of silicon in both transistors, the equivalent of the off and on mechanical switches that speak binary, and microchips, the wafer holding the miniaturized transistors. Silicon is a semiconductor that permits the particular manipulation of an electrical current, hence electronics, to boost both the number of transactions possible and the power needed to execute them. The rapid advances in computing that the miniaturization of this technology has generated gave rise to Moore's Law. In 1965, Gordon Moore, the co-founder of the chip manufacturer Intel, predicted that the number of transistors on a microchip would double every 2 years, while the cost of computers would halve. The hardware was nearly ready. But now to the software. How did programming develop from punch cards to the kinds of algorithms that can crash stock markets? This requires advances in both the kind of program language used and in the mathematical complexity of it. The first programs were written in machine code, which uses numbers to express basic instructions, cast in the kind of binary language that Leibniz would recognise. Frustrated by the highly detailed and arduous nature of this hand-coding process, in 1957, John Backus and his team at IBM developed a symbolic programming language called Fortran, by combining a form of English shorthand with algebraic equations. Other high-level general-purpose programming languages followed, each trying to make the task of programming more efficient and accessible. Sophisticated decision logics were also developed to add more intelligence into the process. From the highly mechanical programs that required hands-on human intervention, programs evolved to become expert systems, which could interrogate data and make independent decisions. Increasingly, they also used natural language programming, such that nowadays young children can build their own cartoons in an intuitive program called Scratch. Meanwhile, the mathematics was also progressing at pace. In 1854, George Boole invented what is now a foundational logic in programming, because his algebra was used to solve the problem of optimizing the use of switches. Claude Shannon at MIT, 1937, and Viktor Shestakov at Moscow State University, 1941, both identified Boolean algebra as the key to deploying electrical switches to process logic, the basic concept that underlies the digital circuit design in all modern computing. On top of this foundational logic sits a welter of mathematical constructs to govern the now complex array of different problems being solved by AI. These instructions are generally nested in specific algorithms, which are programs that instruct a computer or other AI to follow a specified process or set of rules for calculations or other problem-solving tasks, expressed in one of the programming languages referred to earlier. As we shall see, it is these algorithms in particular which drive AI and have fueled its progress. In this context, the UN's World Commission on the Ethics of Scientific Knowledge and Technology has drawn a distinction between deterministic robots and cognitive robots. While both are programmed with algorithms, the former use prescribed deterministic algorithms to control predictive behaviour, while cognitive robots are programmed with stochastic algorithms, which include learning functionality that makes their behaviour ultimately unpredictable. In recent years, the work of the 18th century statistician Thomas Bayes has also reached prominence in AI, because his 1763 Thinking on Probability has become key to machine learning, to which we shall return. Deep learning. The advent of machine learning algorithms in the 1960s gave AI the ability to automatically self-improve through experience. Machine learning is the general term for the development of algorithms in AI that drive its autonomous development, using training data to enable the AI to make future predictions or decisions without being explicitly programmed to do so. Deep learning has now taken this to a level of complexity that has produced a step change in the progress of AI. Deep learning is a term that has been popularized by Geoffrey Hinton and others since 2006. Although more basic multilinear machine learning networks have formally existed since the 1960s. Deep learning was inspired by the discovery in the 1960s of the interplay between the simple and the complex cells in the visual cortex. These fired differentially in response to visual sensory inputs and work as a team to identify the object in view. This insight informed the design of the artificial neural network architectures used in modern deep learning, which establish layers of problem-solving between artificial neurons, and a division of labour by layer, with multiple relationships and iterations between them, to optimise data processing. This architecture allows AI to move on from step-by-step problem-solving by simulating the fast and intuitive judgments that humans use to recognise patterns and anomalies. The early deep learning programmes rejoiced in some dramatic names. In 1979, Kunihiko Fukushima built the Neocognitron, which used a hierarchical, multi-layered artificial neural network to recognise handwritten Japanese characters and other patterns. And in 1992, Wang and others built the Kriskeptron, which learned image recognition from watching video images. They failed to achieve the processing efficiency of the biological brain, so progress was comparatively slow, until innovation in the gaming industry turbocharged the next phase. A bit like the snowboarding industry transforming ski technology, the advent of cheap, multi-processor graphics cards for gaming, graphics processing units, GPUs, fueled improvements in deep learning. Their suitability for creating complex virtual realities also made GPUs perfect for artificial neural network training, where they can make learning 50 times faster. A further acceleration was achieved through an innovation called supervised long short-term memory, LSTM, recurrent neural networks. These are good at remembering and discovering the importance of events that happened thousands of processing steps ago, and it was one of these so-called LSTMs that at the 10th International Conference on Document Analysis and Recognition in 2009 won 3 connected cursive handwriting character recognition tests in 3 different languages, French, Arab, Farsi, without any previous linguistic knowledge, by performing simultaneous segmentation and recognition. Also in 2009, a recurrent neural network taught itself to drive a simulated car using training videos, learning both control and visual processing from scratch. In 2011, a further milestone was reached in the area of traffic sign recognition, which is important for the programming of autonomous cars. Using a snappily named Max Pooling Convolutional Neural Network powered by gaming processors, the program achieved a 0.56% error rate, which was twice better than that achieved by human test subjects. A year later saw advances in medical image processing, when a deep learning program won a contest on visual object detection at the flagship conference of the International Association of Pattern Recognition, being able to detect mitosis in breast cancer histological images, which should vastly improve the medical profession's ability to speed up diagnosis. And speech recognition has also dramatically improved over recent years, thanks to the use of neural networks for speaker recognition, as pioneered by the Stanford Research Institute, SRI. The SRI's deep neural network was deployed for the first time commercially in the year 2000 in the company Nuance Communications Verifier System, now being acquired by Microsoft. In 2015, Google announced that it had also massively improved performance by incorporating the neural network approach of deep learning into Google Voice Search. After the computer program Deep Blue became the chess world champion in 1996-1997, and another IBM computer called Watson won $1 million on the US quiz show Jeopardy in 2011, deep learning has increasingly been applied to games, most famously to tackle the seemingly intractable intellectual challenge of winning the game Go. Originating in China over 3,000 years ago, Go involves two players using black or white stones, taking turns to place their stones on a board. The aim is to surround and capture their opponent's stones, or to create territory. Once the game is over, the stones and the empty points are counted, and the person with the highest number wins. While the rules are simple, in mathematical terms it is extremely complex. As the DeepMind website puts it, there are an astonishing 10 to the power of 170 possible board configurations, more than the number of atoms in the known universe. This makes the game of Go a Google, 1 times 10 to the power 100, times more complex than chess. The neural network approach of deep learning is particularly suitable for handling a problem of such computational scale. Using a combination of a neural network devoted to policy about the next move, balanced by a value neural network charged with predicting who will win the overall game, AlphaGo was trained by playing both with human amateurs and with itself, using reinforcement learning. AlphaGo has famously defeated a series of Go world champions globally and is still being updated, making South Korean Lee Sedol, a 9-dan Go master, the only human to have ever beaten AlphaGo. In 2020, DeepMind's sister program, AlphaFold 2, showed that it could determine the 3D shapes of proteins from their amino acid sequence, thus solving the protein folding problem that has stumped biologists for over 50 years. This was not only a milestone for AI, but for science. Determining their structure allows scientists to understand the physical interactions within the proteins, as well as their evolutionary history. This breakthrough has vastly accelerated efforts to understand how signals are transmitted across cell membranes, and will help scientists to identify malfunctioning proteins and how they interact, which will improve drug discovery. In July 2021, DeepMind released AlphaFold on the internet, so that it could be used by everybody. Reinforcement learning. The field of deep learning has been generally improved by the widespread integration of reinforcement learning, such as that used in Go and the car driving example, whereby a program learns autonomously in an interactive environment, using trial-and-error feedback from its own actions and experiences. Reinforcement learning uses rewards and punishment as signals for positive and negative behaviour. When AI is trained on competitive games, this is easily achieved through the scoring of points and the use of win-lose scenarios. Otherwise, the programmer needs to identify a scheme of reward for the task that does not accidentally incentivize truant behavior. This is expressed as a number, and the program is told to maximize this number, with negative rewards being used to correct mistakes. This use of reward signals to formalize programming goals is the distinctive feature of reinforcement learning. But as with children, it is fraught with challenge. Rewarding AI for chess pieces won rather than for winning the whole game is like children learning to skip through quick reads rather than long books if they are rewarded by quantity and not quality. One cautionary tale about getting the reinforcement structure wrong in unsupervised autonomous AI is the story of the launch of Microsoft's Tay Twitterbot on March 23, 2016. It took only 16 hours before the account had to be shut down. Having started with benign tweets, it quickly learned that it could get more attention by tweeting offensive and controversial content, and 95,000 tweets later, it was terminated. Microsoft blamed this PR disaster on trolls. But of course, if you program AI to seek popularity, that is exactly what it will do. This is because deep learning relies on fast, greedy learning algorithms that prioritize quantity over quality. If, in analyzing millions of tweets, the AI learned that most of them were extreme and that this promoted popularity within its target segment, why would it pay attention to the minority of less popular but more wholesome accounts? Good reinforcement learning will pay attention to both the what and the how. This also helps with the need for transparency in the programming of AI. Autonomous neural networks are not easy to track, but at least a clear reinforcement structure would permit audit. This means that bespoke reward structures may be optimal, although there are already general reinforcement learning designs available for universal problem-solving AI programs. One example is Jürgen Schmidhuber's Gödel machine, which rewrites any part of its own code as soon as it has found proof that a rewrite might be useful. This is obviously worrying in the context of discussion about kill switches and control, because of the need to be able to turn rogue AI off. Bayesian AI. In 2016, when Wired editor Scott Dadich asked Barack Obama if he was worried about AI going rogue, the then US president said, "You just have to have somebody close to the power cord." This is the idea behind kill switches. One of the more troubling risks of autonomous AI is what happens when it gets so certain that it does the catastrophically wrong thing. As Obama said, the only recourse we then have is human intervention. But the whole point of AI is that it might be too intelligent for us to be able to stop it. Given that we are fallible and may not have programmed AI for every single nuance and eventuality, how do we mitigate this risk? Luckily, the AI community has been giving this a lot of thought and has come up with a clever way to address it, by applying Bayesian logic to deep learning. Bayesian AI operates by playing off the neurons in an artificial neural net against each other, so that they essentially average out. Suppose you have programmed a computer to categorize images by cat or dog, but some images are blurry or erroneously included from another dataset. What you do not want is the computer to force a category on a faulty image that is incorrect. But if it has no categories other than cat or dog to use, either you need to include an open category or you need to add in a measure of doubt. Bayesian AI uses the wisdom of crowds to task all the neurons with categorizing the image, so that the consensus image has a percentage probability attached to it, depending on the degree of agreement. In, say, medical imaging, Variable agreement would trigger human intervention to ensure that...
Sample complete. Ready to continue?